Not that it's not relaxing speaking to you, my very good friend, but I want to do some Command-D, and then I want to go sit down and veg.
Command-D.
Yes. So.
This whole city used to be filled with humans. Families, brothers, fathers. My grandfather worked for a secret organization. When the disaster struck, he sealed us in a protected chamber called Command-D. And, yeah, that's how I got my name. He and I were the last survivors. We stretched the supplies as long as we could. We had a few books, some info reels. He taught me all he could. Until... he was my only companion. My only... friend. His final words were, "You were the last boy on Earth, Command-D. For the sake of humanity, you must survive."
If we're going where I think we are, I doubt any of us will survive.
Journey with them now. Back to the bins.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and over there on the other end of our two tin cans with a string attached is my good friend, Mr. David Pascarella.
Hello, I am the good lion lawgiver.
So today, since it's Dave and I, we're going to do the next installment, the long-awaited next installment of our Command-D read-through.
Is it long-awaited? Are people really?
It was for me. Okay. It was for me, quite frankly. It's been a little while since we did the last one, and I'm reading these as we go along, so I kind of was ready to read the next two, and you know, I wanted to get this done so I could read the next two after that. And I do think we see, not to give away too much, but a little bit of a shift in the focus in these issues. Yeah. Well, more so in my issue than in yours, but you know, we'll work our way through them. In your issue, we have the very famous presidents, which is cool.
That's what makes it cool. That's why I wanted that book, from the cover alone. See, spoiler, I would have bought this off the rack based on the cover alone.
Well, I do own all but two issues of this series.
And which two were you missing?
I have to look on my app, but they are much higher in the run. Hopefully we will get to them at some point, but
maybe you'll get them by the time we get there.
I would say there's a very good chance of that. I am missing issues numbered 53 and 55.
Okay. We have some time.
Yeah, we definitely have some time at the rate we're going. Figure if I get them by the year 2030, we're good.
If I live that long.
I just plan on being immortal, but that's just me. What can I tell you? So let's jump right into our Command-D retrospective. And today we are looking at issues numbered 8 and 9. And Dave has number 8. The stage is yours, Dave.
Thank you, my friend. Okay, issue number 8, cover dated August of 1973, and on sale date of May 10th, 1973, for a whopping 20 cents. Two thin dimes would buy you this. Now, the writer, penciler, and editor is Jack Kirby. The inker, Mike W. Royer. Command-D. Now, this issue really doesn't have a title for all intents and purposes, and I wasn't going to bother making one up. Command-D and the Lion Ranger Sultan explore the human statuary section of a museum, that being a lion museum. Sultan asks Command-D if he can identify who the stone figures are. Command-D replies that he has seen them before in a microfilm. They are presidents. Surrounding the duo are large busts of President Richard M. Nixon, President John F. Kennedy, President, what I believe to be, Lyndon Johnson, and President Dwight Eisenhower. In a splash page encompassing another section of the museum, among huge statues of what I can only characterize as a lion lawgiver a la Planet of the Apes, a Washington-like lion on horseback, and a lion version of the Thinker. And a recent find from a dig is being brought in. The massive statue of Abraham Lincoln from the Lincoln Memorial. And it is Abraham Lincoln. It's not an ape as Abraham Lincoln. For those of you who saw a Planet of the Apes film at some point in the early 2000s.
We'd like to pretend that one doesn't exist.
I'm with you. Sultan is impressed with the new addition, remarking that Commandee's species was once highly valued. Commandee snottily replies that if the lions keep digging around Washington, they will find that humans were more highly valued than the lions think. Sultan acknowledges that the fabled land of the Washington Zoo, that's zoo spelled with two U's instead of two O's, holds many secrets still undiscovered, including the origins of Sultan's people. He tells Commandee how when the great disaster struck, the lions broke out of the zoo and went west to establish the great city they are in now. Suddenly, Commandee and Sultan are confronted by one of the museum's security guards, who informs Sultan that no pets are allowed in the museum and questions why Commandee isn't wearing a tag. Commandee goes berserk and leaps toward the guard. Sultan quickly restrains and muffles Commandee as he makes his excuses and hurries Commandee away. Commandee is deeply disturbed by the encounter and is reminded by Sultan that there's room in the pet pound for even pets who talk. Once outside, the duo observes a lion walking his pet human on a leash and feeding him candy. Commandee goes ballistic and attacks the human pet, calling him a slave and a traitor. Commandee initially has the upper hand, but then the well-dressed and groomed human begins to maul, scratch, and beat Commandee, who is only saved by the intervention of Sultan. As the police lion arrives to address the disturbance, Sultan whispers to Commandee that he tangled with a security pet, and that pet is trained to kill. As Sultan tries to excuse Commandee's wild animal behavior, Commandee attacks the officer and takes his rifle, all the while professing that he doesn't need an alibi, that he's a man. He fires at the officer and even threatens Sultan, who asks him, as his friend, to give him the gun. After all, Sultan is done for Commandee. Commandee shouts, "As my master, you mean? That's what you really mean, isn't it?" Suddenly, the anger drains from Commandee, and he feels reason return. He resigns himself and throws the rifle through the glass of a store window. Sultan feels true compassion for Commandee and knows he can't let him be put in the slave pound. As the police officer moves in to take Commandee, Sultan bolts with him, and the two escape on Sultan's dune cycle. Sultan takes Commandee to the site of a wreck of a Santa Fe passenger train that only the Rangers know about. Before they part company, Sultan gives Commandee his gun, an ammo belt. Sultan warns him that the wilds are dangerous, but he'll have a chance to be free here. Just be wary of looters. Commandee takes shelter in the train whose dead passengers met their fate in the great disaster. Suddenly he hears the cry of what he believes to be a coyote. As he investigates, he finds himself under attack by bears. Commandee tries to flee the lands, flee and lands at the feet of Ben Boxer and Renzi. Before they can catch up, Ben and Renzi activate their fission powers and become steel to battle the Bear looters. After a pitched battle, the looters are left in a heap, and the old friends catch up. Commandy is updated. Ben thought he was dead, and that during a skirmish between their guerrilla captors and the Tigers, Ben and Renzi were able to escape. They take Commandy to their discovery, a cave they believe could be the very site of the ancient atomic test that was built by their ancestors. Ben explains that their ancestors were scientists and astronauts who learned to survive the disaster by living with radiation. They still wear old spacesuits to prevent body radiation leaks, kind of like lead line depends. The trio are about to depart in a huge balloon when the Bears launch a firebomb attack on them. Commandy provides covering fire, and the three make their escape into the sky. In the balloon, they find their companion Steve, the other member of the survey team. They make their way south toward their home, known as Tracking Site. Commandy finds the name familiar, and Ben explains it's possible that Commandy may have learned of it in his microfilm as it was built for the astronauts before the great disaster. Commandy laments that Ben and Renzi are not what man used to be. But they are not lions or tigers, or bears, oh my, for that matter. He believes he won't feel strange in their town. We're left with a hint. Not true, Commandy. Not true, readers. Wait until you see Tracking Site. And that is issue number 8.
So, I mean, it does have the feel, and correctly so, that it's the end of a chapter and moving on to the next chapter. I mean, the thing here, well, a couple of observations. First of all, I like the introduction of the Bears as another personality type, that they're looters and scavengers and, you know, certainly threatening. I am really thrown off by the sequence of pictures of Commandy's face on page 15, which I find quite disturbing. There's a shot of him. Yes. It's like he's ready to pass out. He's kind of waking up, and then his eyes get wide, and then he gets total, as Scott would say, derp face when he realizes that it's Ben Boxer, and it's really just extremely disturbing looking to me.
Yeah, it's like the drugs kicked in.
Yeah. Now, directly below that one in the panel, perspective-wise, Commandy looks so small next to Steve and Renzi.
Right, but I mean,
I wonder if that's supposed to be accurate to his size, or if it's just, you know, poor perspective for the moment, or if he's supposed to be further back than it appears. So I thought, yeah, you know, Commandy was just about adult-sized.
Unless they're super-sized.
Could be. Otherwise, I'm enjoying the art in here for the most part. The Bears kind of look a little too lionish. Just the coloring. Like, if you made the coloring the lion color, I don't know that I'd be able to distinguish them.
I'm with you, but I guess I'm going to no-prize this, that they had to do something with the faces, and while they do look like lions, because, I mean, what's your image of a talking bear?
Yogi,
right? If you did it anyway where it really looked like a bear, you'd expect them to be going, "Hey, boo-boo, what do you think about the looting?"
Well, Yogi,
What is Ranger Smith going to say?
Ranger Sultan.
Yeah. The body type is different. They're definitely like much thicker and, you know, wider. And clearly quite strong.
Yeah.
But again, I think he could have done something to make the faces. I think what he needed to do was maybe make a little less of a mane and make the snout come out a little further.
Yeah. Yeah.
But story-wise, I guess it might be a little too coincidental that he just runs back into Ben again. But I've been waiting for Ben to come back, so I'm kind of cool with that.
And that's why he has the derp face.
That is the source of the derp face.
Actually, that would make more sense if he found Flower still being alive.
Yeah, that would definitely create a derp face.
I got a kick. I enjoyed the museum scenes the most, to be honest with you.
Well, again, like in the previous issues, they're showing the lions to be more civilized than the other types of animals that we're seeing. Even with the situation with the tracking or whatever is the security animal, who I also find quite disturbing, quite frankly.
Right.
Just the way that you know, I guess he's supposed to be, you know, he's a pet, and I guess it's supposed to be like the way some people groom their poodles.
Yeah, that's what it is, I guess. But Commandy, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, and then the disconnect to have him be such a skilled fighter.
Right.
Skilled and ferocious.
And, you know, contrasting the civilized behavior of the lions really is Commandy, who I understand he's disturbed with the situation, but he's the one acting like a wild animal.
That is true. I mean, he's got to understand that he's out of his element. I think I'd feel a little differently about it if he had grown up in human society. Mm-hmm. And now had to deal with this. If he was Charlton Heston in Planet of the Apes, I kind of understand the total frustration. But he grew up in a world where the only other human he dealt with was his grandfather, if I understood correctly.
Right.
So it's not like he lived in the human-dominated world, and now he has to adjust to a new status quo. He's really still just getting his feet wet in living in society at all. So I don't know that it's correct for him to be so thrown off by humans acting differently.
But he's not doing anything.
It's like he's insulted by it.
Right. But the thing is, he's not doing anything to prove them wrong. Do you know what I mean? He's not saying, oh, well, I'm a logical creature. No, he's going to attack the god. He's going to attack the other human. He's going to take the policeman's gun and then throw it through a window instead of even trying to show, look, I have reason. I can, you know, converse. I'm logical. No, actually, you're proving the point.
Yeah, I agree. Which, while it's not what you want in your hero, but it does explain, okay, or it gives a logical reason for it's time for you to leave this lion civilization now because you clearly aren't meshing.
Right.
Nor are you making a real effort to mesh, which is even probably more significant. So, I mean, Sultan won't have any reason to think, well, he needs to adjust, but once he does, he'll be fine. Because he's not making an effort to adjust.
You know what I keep seeing in my mind initially? When the apes arrive on Earth in the beginning, when it's shown that they can speak and the public is, you know, taken back with them. this would be the society that might be initially open in the same way, the lions. This human is intelligent. This human can speak. A la Cornelius.
Certainly, it wouldn't go much. I don't think it would go worse for him than the way this does.
Right.
And he's already had a couple of examples of this as we've gone on. So there should be, with him being as intelligent as we're led to believe he is, there should be an effort to adjust now, saying, well, that isn't working. Let me try something else.
It's a shame, because I would have liked to have seen more about the Lion Society and its foundations. But I am equally curious about, you know, tracking site. For some reason in my head, I keep hearing tracking station every time I read that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to get there very soon. What do you think of the art in this issue, other than the derp face? Let's leave that off the table for now.
Other than the derp face, I think it's fairly good. You know, the museum.
I think the museum stuff is excellent.
Excellent.
But I think the stuff after the museum, it feels like Mike Roya had a little bit too much of a heavy hand on some of the inking. Some of his line work is a little thick and I think overemphasized a little bit.
Well, he got the Santa Fe train down great.
Yeah, that does. I'm focusing on facials. Faces. And I'm feeling like he kind of overplayed them a little bit.
I could see that.
Otherwise, you know, the train, I really feel like that's Kirby's work and he's just darkening the lines.
But that's where I am on this.
Yeah, me too. It was a fun story. You know, I don't want to downplay it. I enjoyed reading it. I would like to see Commandy acting a little bit more like the hero of our tale, instead of just kind of along for a ride and overreacting to stuff. But this is probably more realistic because not everybody's a hero.
And how old did we say we think he is about?
Don't recall, but now I'm thinking, and I could be totally wrong on this, so take it for what it's worth. I'm thinking that I had thought he was like 17.
Yeah.
And then from reading the stuff, I think he was a little younger than that, like maybe 15.
Yeah.
Which also makes sense for him being smaller than the other people, because if at 15, you're not fully grown yet.
I could see that. I am glad they brought back Ben Boxer and Renzi.
Yeah, I'm wondering how long they stay in this series. You know, are they there till the end, or do they get eliminated at some point? But we, you know, we're going to see as we continue to dive through this. We have a long way to go.
Yeah. Well, we've already seen they're willing to kill off characters you think are going to be around.
Yeah, that's true. You know, we lost Flower. We lost the giant ape guy.
Nobody.
You want to rate this?
Okay. For me, the best part about the book is the cover. Like I said, for me, because of my interest, this would have sucked me in. The presidents look good. Commandy looks good. The lions, a little so-so. And it doesn't quite exactly represent the scene from the book. But overall, I would give the cover a B, a solid B. The story's, it's okay. It moves the plot along. It gives us a little bit of insight into the civilization of the lions. It's a definite dividing point. It introduced more villains in the form of the bears. Brought back our old friends, Ben Boxer and Renzi. It was an enjoyable read. I'm going to give the story a solid B, too. The interior art, it's all right. I've already voiced my criticisms. I would give it a C plus the art for an overall grade of a B minus on this book.
Yeah, we're pretty close on our opinions. Again, I don't like the fact that they have the dividing line on the cover. And that's going to be going on, and I'm going to keep mentioning it in other issues. But just, you know, you got a black background, and if that black background had extended to the top, and then you still had your DC logo, the Commandy logo, the words, the 20 cents, the comic, sorry, I think this would be a much sharper looking cover overall. I don't think you need that navy blue section or the royal, no, I guess it's navy blue. There's really no reason for that to be there, but that's more of a more of an editorial decision than an artistic one. So I'm not going to hold that against the cover. And I'm going to say the cover is sharp. And yeah, this would have pulled me in. Even at the age I was when this came out, which would have been 9, I still would have been all over this. So I'm going to say a B plus on the cover. The interior art, I think we have some things that are terrific, like the statuary and the train, as you mentioned, and some of the action sequences are really good. I don't like the faces. I think that is mostly the inking. I don't think that's really Kirby, but you know what? The art is the art, no matter if, you know, you can't split up the overall decision on the final. So I'm going to say the art is just a B. But it could have been better. The story, I think it does a good job of wrapping up this kind of chapter in his story and moving on to the next one. Like we said, it gives you a little bit of insight into his personality, that he's, you know, that he's a hothead. And, you know, we got the return of the characters, and, you know, they leave off with... I like the ending. He's saying to Ben Boxer, "Well, at least I won't feel strange in your town." And then in the last box, it says, "Not true, Commandy. Not true, readers. Wait till you see tracking site." I think that's very intriguing and makes you look forward to picking up the next issue, which we're going to get to in a moment. So I'm going to say a B minus on the story, but you know, it's solid. It's enjoyable, and overall, I'll give the book a B.
Cool.
Moving on to Commandy number 9, which had a cover date of September of 1973 and was also with a price tag of 20 whole cents. The story is titled Tracking Site, and it's written and penciled by Jack Kirby, inked and lettered by Mike Royer, edited by Kirby, but this time around he has a co-editor, Steve Sherman, who I'm not familiar with. The cover is by Kirby and Royer and shows Commandy along with his humanoid friends, Ben Boxer, Renzi, and Steve, in the basket of their flying apparatus, fighting off giant humanoid bats. The copy tells us Paris had its Eiffel Tower, Rome had its Colosseum, but Tracking Site, the strangest city on Earth, has super killers. What was Central America is gone, scorched and gouged from the face of the earth in one great blow by some natural holocaust. Now, seen from the sky, it looks like the barren face of the moon, and from its giant cracks and caverns rise the first of many terrors that are to threaten Commandy, the last boy on earth. The splash page has a giant bat front and center in its supervillain onesie, and Commandy is shooting at it with concerns for rabies as other bats circle the basket. We then have Kirby's signature two-page second splash with a pop art combination of photograph and drawing as a strange drone-type machine approaches and scares off the bats. The device is called a Laseroni, not to be confused with Macaroni or Ronzoni, but it is a device that is specifically created to protect them from the bats. And so our heroes come in for a splashdown in an orbiting great globe hovered by magnetic suspension in midair since the pre-disaster days. Uh-huh. They come down into water and float until they're aided to the deck by a robotic assistant known as Servitex. Upon boarding, there is a homecoming ceremony with the Servitex lining up, and then they go to Mission Control, which is also known as NASA Mind, which is drawn in typical Kirby tech fashion and creates cartridges of data from the survey teams. But suddenly, they're confronted by a Servitech that shocks all of them, except Commandy, who is evading the blasts and manages to shoot the robot, leading us to the next chapter, Murdering Misfit. Now, the Misfit is a deformed, short and stout fella being carried by a Servitech and reminds me of Quatu from Total Recall. He has mental control over the facility and has Ben, Renzi, and Steve in some sort of deep sleep. He claims that he can control the machines and someday any form of life. He has the Servitex put a harness on Commandy with a seat for the Misfit in the back. The Misfit reveals to Commandy that he has Mordococcus, the ultimate germ, but says he won't release it as long as he controls every living creature. Apparently, it killed off all the humans on tracking station, and Commandy backs into an electrical unit to cause an explosion, releasing him from the Misfit. However, this also shorts out the security system, making them vulnerable to the bats, who begin to rip their way into the facility. Commandy hightails it out with the Misfit under his arm, and the Misfit sends out a command to the Servitex, who put up only a token resistance to the bats who tear them asunder. The Misfit sends another mental command to wake Ben and the others. Commandy refuses to leave the Misfit to the bats and meets up with Ben and company, who shoot the bat that has approached, but the threat looms of the bats freeing the killer germ. And that's where we're going to go next issue. So, we really introduced a lot of new concepts here, which I thought was cool. I thought the art was actually a step up in this issue, except for the pop art thing on the second page, but which is just silly. Kirby did that in Fantastic Four, and I don't know what, you know, it failed then and it fails now.
I got a kick out of it.
But the story itself I thought was pretty cool. I like, you know, this is the mind of Jack Kirby. He just creates these things. So he's got this floating area, which is like a little bit like a little planet above the planet. And then the Misfit and his mind control planet
within a planet within a planet. What's missing? Planet within a planet.
But I thought the art overall was a step up. I thought the story was cool. I got a big kick out of the Misfit. Do you remember, I can't remember what the name was because it's just thinking of it now. There was an episode of the Flintstones where the Gruesomes moved next door. Yes. And he looks like the father or husband of the Gruesomes.
Weren't they like a ripoff of the Addams Family sort of?
Yeah, definitely sort of.
It was like the Gomez, a little short guy, the Misfit.
Yeah, he had the little mustache. And he also reminded me, as I said, of Quato from Total Recall.
Start the end.
But I thought his character was very cool. I thought I thought just a lot of the stuff we got to was cool. The art there was a lot of Kirby tech drawn in here. I thought the inking was a little less heavy-handed than it was in the last one. And I really thought it was cool. And now we can't go too much longer before we do issues 10 and 11 because I want to see what happens with the killer germ.
I guess we're going to have to work on that.
Yep. What'd you think?
I'm going to start with the negative. The bats don't do it for me. It's just, to me, they kind of look really goofy. I mean, we've seen a lot of goofy stuff.
The onesie is goofy.
The onesie is what, you know, if it was just like an animal, you know, like Man Bat, maybe if he had just a set of trunks or shredded clothes, it would work better, I think. The onesie is what just, you know, if they're rabid creatures, but yet they're wearing onesies. So that's, to me, that's the one negative. I think the bats look a little goofy.
I'm gonna address that first, because I'm gonna say in my head they are extremely vicious, but considering what we've seen so far, I'm thinking they are more intelligent than what they've shown here. Then, you know, or at least they were maybe before the rabies hit. In which case, it's not so much that they're wearing onesies as it is the style of the onesie that I don't care for.
With the little flap.
If it had just been, if it had been a one color with almost like a deep blue color or a deep purple color or something along those lines, and just, you know, a solid look, I think I would have liked it better.
Because it looks like a circus costume.
You know what it looks like? It looks like the costume from The Demon.
Yeah, well, it's the colors, right?
Yeah.
Somewhat. Yeah, maybe he had material left over.
On the splash page, though, like the bat's face, I think that's pretty cool looking.
Yeah. It's the costume, I guess, that's taking me out of it.
And I can't correct you on that, because I think you have a good point. But I'm willing to overlook it, because other than the costume, they seem to pose a serious threat.
Yeah. And they've gotten much... Proportionally, they've gotten larger than all the other creatures, because we've seen lions and tigers and bears, oh my, and gorillas. But
we saw rats, and the rats were small.
Rats, yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, the closest thing to a bat would be a rat, and right, the rats are small, but the bats are big. So, yeah, I don't understand that unless, you know, I guess they are mutated somehow beyond just the intelligence level.
From the radiation?
That's what I'm thinking.
All right. The pop art, two pages I just read, maybe two weeks ago, 2001, the comic.
He's got some of that in there, yeah.
You got some of that in there, so it's like a little throwback, which I read that because I saw the movie, and I didn't understand what was going on. Now I've read the comic.
In the movie or in the comic?
In the movie.
Or both.
I got more out of the comic book than I did the movie.
Interesting. We might have to cover that, the adaptation, not necessarily the series.
It was the adaptation. But the pop art, I don't know, kind of like, I wasn't sure exactly what he was trying to do here. But
I don't think it works, personally.
I found it very 2001-ish.
Well, he definitely had done similar things in the Fantastic Four, where he did the pop art thing a couple of times.
I am woefully remiss in having read the Fantastic Four, but
you can read it and then listen to the episodes of the Fantastic Cast as you do.
I will need another 20 years of my life to get through everything I want to read.
As will I, but I hope to have that.
I hope so too. The shot where Commandy's in the balloon with these, the goggles on, that reminds me of something else, and I can't put my finger on it. The goggles.
I'm thinking it's out of the Road Warrior.
Yeah. Yeah. Predicting the future. I get a kick out of the whole splashdown, you know, like the return of the capsules to Earth business. Oh, we're going to strap in. Okay, we're going in. And then they just drop down the chute, splash into the water.
It's like it's more on ceremony than anything else. Then they have to come up and they have the servitors or whatever they are saluting them or standing at attention, you know, in a row.
The piping aboard, like you would come onto a Navy ship.
Yeah.
The Saboteurs remind me a little bit of that. I've never seen the movie, but I've seen the movie Metropolis. You know, from the 20s.
I've never seen it as well, but I know what you're talking about.
That's the image I get out of this. But I do get a kick out of, you know, being brought aboard the carrier structure, just like the retrieval of the capsules onto the aircraft carrier. The Saboteurs turning on them. I guess the logic is Misfit controlling them directly, like they were. It's a machine. I can see if he hacked the system.
Well, I don't know if somehow he is mentally controlling them individually, or if somehow mentally he managed to change their programming, or, you know, I don't know exactly what it is, but he basically says he can control all machinery. I would like to have a flashback issue where they give you the actual history of the Misfit and, you know, where he came from and how he boarded this tracking station, and were they aware of him in the past, or was he, you know, living under the radar until he finally revealed himself here?
He's in the forgotten level in between, like on Babylon 5. There's a floor in between floors where the Misfit resided, and then took, like, the people under the stairs.
Now, does the Misfit have, like, a big red head, or is that supposed to be hair?
Oh, I kind of got the impression that it was hair.
I think it's supposed to be, but I think it would actually be better if that was like his head. And it's kind of like his brain pulsating through it or something. It's tough to tell. Like, I'm looking at page 12, and the second panel has a relative close-up of the side of his head. And there it almost looks like it's a swimming cap or something.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that. It looks kind of like a colored version of the Talosians.
Yeah.
Or the assets, as you'd like to say.
But I definitely, like I said, I would like to see them explore his history a little bit and give us a little bit more, not just, okay, he's here. But, you know, this one definitely had the effect of making me want to read more. And that's always a bottom line that I have to give credit for.
This ability he has to control machines, and he's working on controlling any form of life. It almost reminds me, what's his name? Is it Hector Hammond? Hammond? Green Lantern, yeah. Right?
Green Lantern.
Well, he's crippled, but, you know, his brain can control things. I'm curious to see where this goes.
Me too, definitely.
The how did you pronounce this? Mordococcus. It looks like it needs a blue pill.
He says, he says the bats may free it, and then Ben's response is, if they do, every living thing on Earth will die. So it's definitely, the stakes are high.
And that could happen in the next issue, and then the next 40 issues at blank pages.
Yeah, that's all. That works. Ready to rate again?
Yeah. You go with your book.
All right. Again, I don't like the split, you know, the top third of the cover being a different color and broken off from it, but I think the artwork on the cover is very good. I think the bats, even with the onesies, look more threatening on the cover. I'm going to say a B+ on the cover. I think it's very good. The interior art, I think, is a step up from the last issue. I think, for the most part, it's well drawn. There are a couple of panels that I think could be just a little better. I think the character models are kind of cool. I like the Misfits look overall. And there's a lot of Kirby tech in here. So I'm going to also say a B+ on the interior artwork. And the story has had me kind of really enjoying it. I'm going to say an A- on the story. I really enjoyed reading this one. And I'm going to give the book a B+ overall.
I'm not too far off from you. I like the cover a little less than you, but not by much. I look at this cover and this is what I see. I see Steve Austin firing the pistol, saying to Commandy, "Swing that rifle or we're all finished." But I think it's a dynamic cover. It's solid. And I give it a solid B. I think other than the real freakiness of the Bat's costume, once I got past that, I think the overall interior art is pretty good. I happen to like the pop art page, and I don't even know why. And I gave the art overall a solid B+ on the interior. The story I found fascinating. I got a kick out of the whole paralleling, you know, NASA, the return of the capsules, the carrier, the Misfits, a real freak, entertaining. And I'm very curious to see where this not only goes, but I would hope maybe we're going to get a little more background on the tracking site. So for that, I gave the story another solid B+ for an overall grade on this book of B+.
Cool. So that'll do it for Commandy issues 8 and 9. And we'll be back to look at 10 and 11 in the not too distant future. In the meanwhile, thank you everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.